Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest this week is Carrie Clendaniel. Carrie is the preserve manager for the Jefferson Land Trust. And what that means is she leads all the restoration and maintenance activities on all the properties that the Land Trust has as nature preserves, which is a pretty amazing responsibility. And lots of Land Trust volunteers know Carrie because she's the one who leads the work parties and helps the various volunteer preserve land stewards do their job. Welcome, Carrie. It's an amazing job you have.
I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I want to also share that Carrie actually started with the Land Trust as a volunteer, right?
That's right.
And then as an AmeriCorps staff person?
Mm-hmm. AmeriCorps member.
Yeah. Member. And then worked her way up to preserve manager.
Yeah.
So you've been there, what?
A bit over 13 years at this point.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Time flies, right?
Yeah. We'll be talking about nurse logs today. What are they? Why are they ecologically critical? And what the Land Trust is doing to increase their significance on the preserves. And we'll even learn about an upcoming work party to build, and I'm using this in quote, surrogate nurse logs.
Mm-hmm.
On the Quimper Wildlife Corridor. We'll get back to that later. First, let's hear this week's mystery sound. Well, that sound was the winter call of the bird. It's nothing like their haunting, trilling songs of spring and early summer. They're shy birds, and many have just arrived this fall in the lowland woods around Port Townsend. And they're being seen quite often, actually, at bird feeding stations in local parks and riparian areas. We'll come back to that at the end of the show for the great reveal. And today's program, and it's interesting, it's kind of a continuation of a thread that we introduced earlier this fall when I was interviewing Linda Mapes about her new book, The Trees Are Speaking, Dispatches from the Salmon Forests. And in that program, we talked about the aliveness of dead trees and their ecological significance. And I pulled a couple of quotes out of her book because I particularly liked them. She has a statement about deadwood, a spectacular diversity of rot, a marvelous mortuary of cellulose critical to the life of the forest, and remarkably persistent. She also introduced us in the book to Dr. Mark Harmon, who's at Oregon State, and he's sort of Dr. Death among the trees. He's shown, and I think this is fascinating, that what we think of as dead trees can be 10 to 20% alive in their cells and tissues, fungi, decomposers, whereas if you look at live trees and look at their tissue types and cells, they have maybe 5% living tissue, and that's in the leaves, the cambrium, the root fibers, and it even includes the mycorrhizae that connect them. I like that comparison because it really blurs the distinction between what's alive and what's dead.
So I heard this amazing fact that just blew my own mind last spring. It was during our Youth Corps Spring Break paid internship program, and we were hosting a forester from DNR. A couple of different foresters came out to speak to the students, and we were talking about deadwood in the forest. We were actually working on a project to create standing snags for wildlife, and this forester, without knowing what we were working on, volunteered that dead wood in the forest holds 1,000 times more living organisms than live trees.
Wow. That's another way of expressing. I think it's really fascinating. And yeah. I think it also, it kind of points out somewhere in our minds, we think, well, dead, that's equivalent to useless. Mm-hmm. It's whatever, we can get rid of it. We don't need to pay any attention to it, which of course is dead wrong, right? And let's see, indulge me with one more quote from Linda Mapes's book. I really enjoy her writing. She says, once a tree dies, its next life is just beginning. Once fallen to the ground, a tree has a whole new purpose. It has not died at all, but attained a new stage in importance. Messy masses of large woody debris all over the ground are a glorious signature of a wild forest, tangled, jackstrawed, and uninterrupted in their conversation with the legacy of the forest's past generations. These legacies give rise to the future, and the forest lives on with a continuity to the next generation. So that brings us to nurse logs.
To nurse logs.
Yes. And I will also say I got sort of stimulated to contact Carrie by reading about the work party. You've done one already, right?
In the Quimper Wildlife Corridor. Yep, we were out there a couple weeks ago.
And there's one, another one in December, and we'll talk about more of that later, I'm sure. And when I think about nurse logs, I'm pretty sure most of our listeners have an image of a nurse log.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see them around our forests. And you can see them in Fort Worden. You can see them, amazing ones, out the Ho River Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up a definition of a nurse log. And the American Forest Organization says, fallen trees that provide ecological facilitation as they decay. Nurse logs offer the seedlings shade, nutrients, water, protection from disease and pathogens, thus nurturing and making way for the new generation of plants and animals. Tell us more. Tell us a little bit about sort of biologically what's going on when a tree dies and falls in the forest.
Yeah.
We won't ask that weird question about can you hear it if nobody falls, right? You know, but what is that rot all about biologically?
Oh my gosh. Well, nurse logs are just so exciting. We walk through the forest and we see these enormous living organisms, these trees. And I think a lot of us, maybe who aren't so familiar with nurse logs, don't initially realize that when that tree is done living and it falls to the forest floor, it is just as important, if not more so, to the health of that forest and to the wildlife that lives there. So every time a tree falls in the forest, it becomes what we call out in conversation, nurse log. We might also call it coarse woody debris or downed log. So if you hear those terms, it's all the same thing. But this is big material. Think a tree trunk. Here at the Land Trust, we consider nurse logs to be tree trunks 10 inches diameter and greater,
okay,
over 20 feet on the ground. And those numbers get to be pretty important because when we're talking about nurse logs, we're talking about a number of functions that these structures play in the forest. They are decomposing actively, so there's all sorts of fungal networks growing through these nurse logs, fungal networks that connect to the rest of the living forest.
And the decomposing is taking the cellular structure, like the woody part.
Correct.
And breaking it down.
Yep. And in that process, if you've ever touched a nurse log, one that's been on the forest floor for a while, you might have sunk your fingers
into
it.
Yeah.
It's squishy. Was it dry or was it?
Oh, damp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're damp. They hold moisture. They
soak all that rotting
up that winter rain that we get, and they hold it. And they act like this sponge, and they release that moisture over our dry, hot summer months.
Ooh, yeah, of course. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah.
Yeah. So in a forest where we're starting to think about how much water is available to the plants that we want to protect, what we really need to be thinking about is how much dead wood is available to feed those plants with the water they need over the dry months.
Interesting. So I'm thinking, that's thinking about it as a sponge, you're like holes, channels. Because that's going to happen once it starts decaying.
Once the fungi get in there, once the insects get in there, and they begin breaking down that material. Yeah. And while the fungi are moving around in there, while the insects are moving into these nurse logs, you're also now creating a food source for all sorts
sure.
of birds
yeah.
and small animals that want to feed on those insects, or salamanders that need a damp, cold place to hide during mm-hmm. the dry months of the summer.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, you know, when I sort of visually think of a nurse log, the thing that I kind of like first notice other than the log is the moss,
mm-hmm.
which now is that moss getting its nutrients directly out of the decaying log? And then it must also kind of provide sort of some moisture holding capacity. And
yeah. The logs themselves actually don't, they do provide some nutrients to the forest, but the vast majority of the nutrients are held in the leaves of the trees or the needles.
Right.
So once you get to that log stage, it's a little bit less about the nutrients per se.
In the woody cells.
The woody yeah. cells themselves. But the moss certainly has nutrients, and it's able to, again, kind of tie into that rotten material that holds that water. Mm-hmm. So it has a place.
Well, and the fungi and the mushrooms and the insects, of course, are then also providing nutrients, as
Absolutely.
You mentioned, for other creatures.
Absolutely. And we call them nurse logs, of course, because seeds are able to fall on this material as it begins to rot and find a place to grow outside of the forest floor that might be covered with leaves or sticks, where it might be hard to get to compost-like yeah. environment to get started.
Okay, so you've got nutrients, you've got water, you've got a substrate is what you were just talking about.
A substrate with limited amounts of competition compared to the forest floor.
Oh, right, because it's up a little bit
mm-hmm.
and it isn't under the sort of leafy
duff
stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Are there other things that the nurse log is providing? I guess maybe a question like, we're learning so much about the chemistry of fungi and the mycorrhizae and mm-hmm. all of that. Are there advantages in terms of resistance to pathogens or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That a seedling wouldn't find if it was trying to grow somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Couple things going on there. Again, we need to talk about the fungal networks that are growing through these nurse mm-hmm. logs. And we know that those fungal networks, we're learning that those fungal networks can really support trees and their capacity to grow strong.
Mm-hmm.
So seedlings are able to tie into those networks through these nurse logs, or those nurse logs can help harbor those networks even if the trees around them begin to come down, for example, if it's an active timber environment. So you've got that fungal piece that is living, that is a legacy. These are also mm-hmm. called legacy structures.
Yeah.
So you've got the fungal network going in the nurse log. And I can't harp enough on how important that water is to this forest
mm-hmm.
and to the ability
of getting drier summers.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
yeah. Any tree is going to be better able to resist pathogens if it has enough water, if it is not drought stressed.
Yeah. That makes a tremendous amount of sense. Okay, now I'm thinking about a young seedling.
Mm-hmm.
Its roots are tender, and they're going sometimes actually even around the nurse tree.
They tend to get underneath. As the nurse log decomposes, the rootlets can get in between the bark, which is hardier on the outside, and the interior material that begins to rot. So those little rootlets are protected.
So they're protected, and then they get enough time to grow over time.
And the bark sheds off.
Yeah, you
and
get
then
that
you
vision
see that.
Of a tree on top of an old stump with the roots mm-hmm. coming down the edges, or, you know, the classic one of several seedlings in a row with the roots
mm-hmm.
kind of forming the sort of a tunnel where the old nurse log used to be.
Yeah.
So now I've got this image of the seedling. It's got a nice place to live. Its roots are protected, so they're going to be able to grow. Which you wouldn't do if you were on the floor, necessarily. Your roots would be pretty exposed.
Mm-hmm, potentially.
I don't mean to be anthropomorphizing a seedling, but no, just trying to think about it. Now, do you have a sense, and I know there's probably not a ironclad answer to the next question, but about how long does it take for a downed tree trunk to become a nurse log? And then to eventually decay completely. What time frames are we talking about?
It's going to be very dependent on the species of the tree and the site and the moisture and the exposure to the elements. But I was just down at the Duckabush River area last week and saw that one of the surrogate nurse logs that we'd previously built just in, I want to say 2023 maybe, is completely covered with mushrooms at this point.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So it is well on its way to becoming soft and to becoming rotten. But really there's five stages of decay within a nurse log, and you really want all five stages in your forest if you're going for the bingo of nurse logs. And that's everywhere from the tree just fell on the ground to I can barely tell that this used to be a tree.
A tree.
Mm-hmm. And that I can barely tell this used to be a tree can take decades easily.
I heard someone, I can't remember who, say that certainly with certain trees, particularly the conifers, mm-hmm. sometimes they're alive as a nurse log mm-hmm. longer than they were alive as a standing tree, which yeah. kind of goes, huh, kind of interesting perception. So now tell me, the land trust is in the process of doing these surrogate nurse logs, which mm-hmm. I think maybe is a word off of your work party announcement.
Sure.
Yeah. It's like a surrogate. Okay, yep. I get that. And you know, earlier we were talking about the nurse log is sort of facilitating the next generation, and you're sort of facilitating the facilitating.
Yes.
What are you really doing? Just mechanically, what are you doing, and what are you setting up out there?
Yeah. So we're working in second and third growth forests. These forests have been heavily manipulated by European colonialization and these forests typically have a logging history, and so we're starting from a condition where a huge amount of the dead wood that we would expect to see on the forest floor is missing, just to set the scene here.
Right. And it's easily imaginable. You can think of any of the woods around town.
You might look out and you might see a sea of sword fern.
Yeah.
Or a dark forest of fir needles and not much else. Mm-hmm. And that's actually not what we need to see if we want our forest to be prepared for future climate conditions. So when we go into a forest and we're doing one of these nurse log projects, typically we need to collect the material from somewhere. And most often that means dropping a standing tree, usually using a chainsaw. Mm-hmm. And we will drop a number of trees in an area to thin out the forest so the remaining trees have more water available,
more light, and
more sunlight gets down to the forest floor. And then we take that downed material, and thank you in advance, volunteers. We hand lift those logs that have been pre-cut typically into 20-foot lengths because that's what we can carry, to be quite frank.
Yeah, and that's a lot to carry.
It's a lot to move.
So still, how many people?
Typically 4 to 6 people per log.
Okay.
Yep. Sometimes for smaller logs, we can get away with 2 people. But often we're working in teams of 4 to 6, and we've got these straps, and we roll the log onto the straps, and then we lift it, and we arrange it. And we essentially bundle a number of these smaller diameter trees together. We stack them like a pyramid or like a like a trapezoid.
You're getting kind of the volume, but you're making it from smaller trees.
Exactly. Yeah. We're mimicking
a
large tree falling on the forest floor, and we call them surrogate. They're called surrogate nurse logs or constructed nurse logs. We simply do not have the time available to grow a 3-foot diameter tree and wait for it to fall down and become a nurse log. So we're working with what we have.
That makes just a whole lot of sense. So, and then do you place them in particular parts of the forest or particular areas in the landscape, and what makes that decision?
Yeah, a number of factors go into that choice. First of all, we typically are starting from an area where we have too many standing trees for the health of the forest. So that's kind of the first level of decision making, is we need fewer trees if we want this forest to thrive. Mm-hmm. And often when we're in that environment, we're also considering, okay, we need a lot more sunlight down to the forest floor, so we might be dropping the trees kind of in a small opening,
mm-hmm.
so you can get a
little more sunlight,
yeah. down to a single spot. And once we get that situated, we're looking to get the nurse logs in close contact with the ground so that they can really hold that moisture
right.
and feed it back into the forest over the summer.
Right, and the fungi can move from the ground or just like mm-hmm. directly into the trees, so it's easy
exactly.
to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So once we get, okay, we found our spot in the forest, we've got the trees down to the ground, next we're looking for a spot on the forest floor where we can get really solid ground contact and where we can build this surrogate structure out of anywhere from 6 to 12 logs.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then?
And across a slope, horizontal to a slope if we can.
Yeah,
again,
okay.
let's hold that water
hold
in.
Hold the water, yep.
There's an element of practicality here as well. These logs are quite heavy at times,
sure.
and so we can't always get them in the exact perfect position.
The best you can, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then do you do anything to, you know, I don't know, encourage the rot, or you just let nature take its way?
We let nature take its course. The big thing we do is ground contact, and then when we pile these 6 to 12 logs together in a bundle, we're, again, just looking to hold in that moisture. So we might be twisting and turning the logs or being very strategic about which logs go in which layer of the mm-hmm. structure so that we get the best possible contact between each individual log and its
right.
neighbor.
Right, that makes sense. So you're, like, you're kind of designing how you're piling things on top of each mm-hmm. other to optimize
moisture retention.
And moisture potential. Interesting. So tell me in specific about your upcoming work party.
Yeah, December 9th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. We're going to be working in
the
Quimper Wildlife Corridor.
And the 9th is a Tuesday.
It's
okay.
a Tuesday, yep.
In the Quimper Wildlife Corridor, okay.
We're meeting at Cook Avenue and Elmira Street at 10 a.m. And from there, we have all the gloves necessary. We've got all the tools necessary. We're going to gather ourselves together. And we're going to walk deeper into the corridor where our team has already dropped a number of trees from a forest that was overstocked. It had too many live trees mm-hmm. for the available space and nutrient load. So we've got the trees down to the ground. And from there, we break into these teams and we begin building these nurse logs.
Do people need any special experience, knowledge?
None. And we are going to be traveling over uneven terrain, and like
so
we're talking about,
yeah.
this is a bit of a heavy lift, even mm-hmm. with 4 to 6 people per log. So we're careful of our backs, but this is for someone who feels comfortable lifting, I'm going to say, 20 pounds or more over uneven terrain.
Yeah, 20 pounds, yeah.
Last time we did this in the Quimper Wildlife Corridor, I think we built 25 nurse logs in a 3-hour window.
Wow. So how big a crew do you have out there in some of these? I know it depends on the number of folks who volunteer.
Exactly.
So if somebody who's listening wants to volunteer, I suspect they contact the Land Trust and contact you.
They don't even have to. No RSVP is needed. Just show up at Cook Avenue and Elmira Street on December 9th at 10 a.m. with clothes that can go off trail, with water, any personal snacks, and we'll bring everything else, the tools and the instruction and the granola bars.
The granola bars.
It's our currency of choice.
Yes, yes, and appreciated, I'm quite sure. That's interesting.
We have a lot of work parties. We tend to meet most second and fourth Tuesdays at a variety of preserves doing a variety of tasks. So this is not the only activity.
Well, and I know you can always find out about them on either the Land Trust newsletters or just going to the website looking mm-hmm. for upcoming events.
Yeah.
Well, this has been really interesting, and we want to go back and listen to that mystery sound again. Those were the winter calls of the varied thrush. I think the varied thrush is amazingly handsome. It's got a sort of a slaty gray, a little bit of brown in it. back, but its breast is this wonderful, rich, burnt orange color, and then it's got stripes on it, so it's around its neck. And it lives in the dark, wet, mature forests of the Pacific Northwest. They are here all year round. However, as winter comes, some of them actually kind of just move into the Port Townsend area. So we're seeing them more often. I've even seen them around our bird feeders at home. And in the summertime, they feed on insects, and then they switch to berries and seeds in the winter. Hope you got that one. Thanks to the Cornell Laboratory for permission to use the birdsong recordings from the Macaulay Library. And thanks to you, listeners, for joining us today. Hope you've enjoyed it. If you have missed a broadcast program of Nature Now, in addition to finding the podcast on the KPTZ website, you can listen to Nature Now on the podcast app on your smartphone. Just search for Nature Now. And if you enjoy it, please like us. Today, our sound engineer and editor is our trusty friend, Nora Petrich. Thanks you all for listening.